really, really glad to see you here today. It's good to be together. It's a good day to study God's Word and to think about God together and to try to figure out what we want and what we need to do. For those of you who are afraid of the 80-degree weather to come, don't worry, it's not here this morning. It's muggy and wet and disgusting, just like you want it. And for those of you who can't wait for the muggy, wet, disgusting weather to go away, it looks like it's going to be here in a couple hours. So everyone is going to be happy. This is the way that we need to think about things and try to look at things. I want to look at the ideas and the problems that we bump into Whenever it's running, it'll happen. When the screen doesn't work, it's really not that big of a deal. I want to look at the story that we find in Numbers chapter 12. Don't turn there yet if you don't want to. Since verses aren't going to be on the screen, go ahead and turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I think that would be good. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I want to talk about the ideas of complaints and criticism. It's a lesson about criticism, but when you talk about a thing, someone always comes up to you and says afterwards, well, technically we can criticize and we have to do something, we have to make judgments. And I know. Jesus criticized and Jesus was critical of things that needed correction, and so that's the case. So that's why I'm calling it complaint and criticism, because when you put those two words together, I think we get a decent picture of what that means. I talk about how the Psalms teach us how to complain and how to reach out to God in our frustration. So it's not that complaints are all bad or criticism is all bad, but we're trying to figure out how to live the right way. Another word that I was toying around with for what the lesson would be about as I was studying is being sincere, or the problems of insincerity. And those are some of the things that I have been thinking about. When you read 1 Corinthians chapter 13 in verses 4 through, well, honestly, it's the whole chapter is going to make this point. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 in verse 4, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way. It isn't irritable or resentful. It doesn't rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Just those three verses, 4, 5, and 6, is enough to hammer home the point that the aims and the ideals that God gives us are high, and they're demanding, and they're exacting, and much of the time they feel impossible. Love is patient and kind. If you can get those two down, if you can figure out love is patient and love is kind, you're going to get the whole chapter figured out. It is very hard to live with a patient heart and with a kind heart when there are problem people out there. And it could be a problem person, they just don't look at you the right way, or it could be that they're full of sin. I mean, it could be any number of these sorts of issues. God has told us to do things. And we look at these lists in the New Testament. You can jump to Titus if you want. There's another list I've been studying with someone recently, and it jumped into my mind when working on this lesson. When we look at these lists of to-dos or to-don'ts, we realize that this is a high calling. When Paul describes to Titus what elders and overseers and bishops, what they need to be like, for instance, if you look at verses 7 and 8, for an overseer, as God's steward, must be above reproach. Already the list seems near impossible, right? There we go. Above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, disciplined. I'm not a drunkard, but I'm definitely not doing all those other things. We have these limits. I won't do some certain bad things, but then when God gives us the heights to which we're supposed to climb, we think, how am I going to be able to do that? And you can look up some of the words there in verse 8, upright, holy, disciplined, and try to figure out what that means, and you can look at the definitions. But then sometimes it feels like, well, I know that these are good things. What should I do to do them? How do I start doing these sorts of practices? How do I envision them? How do I imagine them in my own life? I think the answer is we're going to use Bible stories. The Bible stories, Old Testament and New Testament, put them into practice, or takes the good words and tears them up with bad behavior, and you're still learning about what the good behavior is supposed to be. I want to look at Numbers chapter 12 as the Bible story that I want to look at today. And I'm not taking this lesson from the two-day study. I'm not just stealing this from what was going on in Exton. I'm stealing it from another guy I heard a week earlier. So I'm at least putting another week on my stealing, right? So verses 1 through 16, it's not a very long chapter, but I'm going to go ahead and read it. Numbers chapter 12, verses 1 through 16. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek, more than all the people who were on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron and Miriam, "Come out, you three, to the tent of meeting." And the three of them came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar and a cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forward, and he said, "Hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak mouth to mouth, clearly and not in riddles, and he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. When the cloud removed from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous like snow. And Aaron turned to Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said to Moses, "Oh, my Lord, do not punish us, for we have done foolishly and have sinned. Let her not be as one dead whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes out of his mother's womb." And Moses cried to the Lord, "Oh, God, please heal her, please." But the Lord said to Moses, "If her father had but spit in her face, would she have not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut outside the camp 7 days, and after that she may be brought in again." So Miriam was shut outside the camp 7 days, and the people did not set out on the march till Miriam was brought in again. After that, the people set out from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. So there's our story. There's a story I want to think about. And I want to think about the ideas here about complaining and criticism, because that's really what this is getting at. If you are living a life critical of the things that you see, if you are living a life and can only complain about that it's muggy and wet this morning, and then complain that it's too hot this afternoon, which is what so much of us do all the time, then we are living a messed up, dark life. We need to be very careful about how we look and view and interact with the things that are around us. Think about this criticism. It's because of the Cushite wife, right? Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. That's what they spoke against him about. Now, count how many words they say about that lady. You're done counting. Like, it's not there. Apparently, they spoke out against her, and it's not even in the text. So it's kind of like, it's nominally over that. It begins with this. There's this complaint about this lady that he's married. Verse 2, "And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Hasn't he spoken through us also?" So they have this sense of, here's something that they're complaining about. Here's something that they can speak about. But really what they end up speaking about is Moses the only one who talks to God? Don't we talk to God? Is Moses the only one who has the words of God? Don't we have the words of God? And I don't know how many words of God Moses and Miriam have. After Moses watches the waters drown Pharaoh and his army, Moses has a song and Miriam has a song. So she speaks the words of God. It's part of Scripture. So she has that there. And I don't know if there's other occasions. But there is this sense, what about us? Me too. I have a voice. I should be able to speak. And maybe she's going for authority, or maybe she's wanting she's frustrated with a little brother. There's all these sorts of issues. And I think that's really the problem here. There's this desire for authority, this desire to have her own, this desire to be able to speak. You've noticed that I'm talking about her and not Aaron at this point. Talk about that later. But in verse 8, I think God confirms it because he doesn't stand up for Moses' wife. I don't think that means God condemns it. But he says in verse 8, talking about Moses, that he speaks with him mouth to mouth clearly. He doesn't use visions and mysteries and riddles. He just tells Moses. Sometimes people get a message from God and they go, oh, what was that? He just speaks it right to Moses. And then he says, why then were you not afraid to speak to my servant Moses? You should have been afraid to say that, is what he says. You should have been afraid to complain because I speak to Moses a certain way. That's a big deal. And God speaks about that. And so there's this pretense. Often when we start to criticize something, it's just that thing that we're trying to pick at, and it's not really the big idea that is bothering us. There's this surface criticism that has very little to do with the fact that I am bothered. So when I am bothered that it's hot out this afternoon, it's probably a decent indication that I'm bothered about something else, and I'm just going to start talking about the heat or the cold, or it's too perfect or it's too imperfect, and we start criticizing these things around us, and it's often because there's something deep-seated that maybe I'm ignoring or I don't want to bring out. We take an opportunity and we start criticizing, and then we move on to the next thing. And how do you think it is for Moses? How is Moses supposed to answer? They're talking about his wife, and then they're talking about speaking, and that they get to speak, and he's like, yes, I'm married, and he's over, but I speak. And so there's all these multiple things that are coming at Moses, and it's probably, I don't know if it's confusing for Moses, but this happens to me. I get confused. Do I address this? Do I address that? We can see the way that people were attacking Jesus that way. If we do that, we're hurting the listener. And we're pushing that person to their own anger and to their own sin. I mean, do you recognize that? My critical nature in attacking someone and biting over here and biting over there is just pushing them from God and making them sin. I can't literally make anybody sin, but we're getting them to go there. And that's a dangerous, bad behavior. We need to not hurt people. It's what comes out of my heart. That's what's wrong. I might talk about something, but where is it coming from? And so then it reveals this insincerity, right? There's a deep-seated problem, and it's coming to the surface. Miriam, and now I got to make this up. I borrowed this part from the lesson earlier in the week. But Miriam, this image of she's probably the older sister. She's been taking care of Moses when he was a little guy, and now here he comes back, and he's hot stuff, and she's been listening to him for so long, and she's had it up to here, and she's going to say, I have a voice. I'm going to say something. Why is everyone listening to him? Man, and I can speak for her. Younger siblings are a pain in the neck. Get rid of them all. And I have had it up to here. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Throw in whatever sort of problem you're dealing with, and just... Yeah, I can imagine talking like Miriam too. Hiding that long time frustration, all that critical thought, all the criticism, and you're holding on to it, and you're holding on to it, and you're just building up beautiful banks of ugly words and ugly thoughts, and you're creating resentment in your heart, and resentment is such a dangerous ingredient to life. When you have this fertile ground of resentment, what sort of fruits are going to grow up in you? And what are you then going to say to all the people to whom you speak? Because the reality is, resentment eventually releases. It always does. And you can very safely, while you're going down the road of life, pull over and let it out. Just dump it out. I don't want to finish the rest of my coffee. You pull over, you dump out the coffee onto the road. It's not that big of a problem, and you can move on with life. Don't throw the cup away and litter, all right? That's wrong. But you're letting that resentment go. If you don't let it go on the roadside of life, it's probably going to come out at the dinner table after a long day at work. And it has nothing to do with dinner. It has nothing to do with your family. Or maybe it has everything to do with your family, but nothing to do with the dinner. And you start flipping tables, and you explode. Resentment comes out. The sins of some people are conspicuous, going before them to judgment, but the sins of others appear later. So too, in the next verse, do good things. But you're holding on to this. It's going to explode if you don't let go. And so this is the results of having that critical nature, of looking at things. I'm not ever really able to acknowledge or see the nice thing, but you're only digging and cutting. And we have to stop it. We have to stop it. Speaking truth in love is what we need to do. Speaking truth in love. If you need to correct somebody, then you need to say it in a way that reveals that you are speaking truth in love. If you recognize that you can't do it that way, then you need to shut your mouth. If you recognize that you can't do it that way, then maybe it's not worth correcting. And this is what we need to be careful about. I think living a critical life is going to lead to an insincere life. And when we live that way, we are going to get ourselves in trouble over and over again. James chapters 4 and 5 has this all over the place. Don't speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks evil against a brother judges his brother. And speaks evil against the law and judges the law. I mean, we know that we're supposed to look at our brother and recognize that here's a wrong and I need to help my brother. This isn't a contradictory verse to that. This is saying, stop talking that way. Stop speaking evil. Stop being so judgmental. Don't grumble against one another. I love that word. I looked it up. Don't grudge. Don't sigh. Don't groan. Don't complain. There's a lot of great synonyms. It's an interesting word there. Don't grumble against one another, brothers. This is what we're called to do, whether it is in your home or at work, in your neighborhood or in the church building. We can't talk this way. Well, we have the full ability to do so, and maybe like what we saw in the book of Amos, where God says, come on, go ahead and sin, right? We have the ability to talk this way, but we cannot do it. And we hurt everyone around us when we do this. It's going to lead to an insincere life. We need to be sincere. Look at James 3. I do want to take the time to read this because I think it speaks to so much. I love the wisdom from above versus the wisdom from below passage at the end of James chapter 3. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, don't boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. If you are living a life of ambition, if you are living a life that is false, if you are living a life that is full of boasting and arrogance and pulling others down to get that much higher, you are living a demonic life. That's a pretty extreme word, but it's James's word. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So here we have another, I opened up with the lists in the New Testament of words, do these things and how it feels complicated. But moving out of the story, and into this list here in James 13 through 18, we can recognize, oh, these are the ways I need to be. I need to not behave in the way that we saw in that story. Open to reason, full of mercy. Those are two hard ones. We need to listen and we need to be careful. And so when I see something that bothers me, I need to be open to reason and full of mercy as I evaluate that thing that bothers me. And that's the way we need to move forward. Well, jumping back to the story, and you can turn back to Numbers 12 if you'd like. This is not a photograph of Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. And I feel kind of bad. Parts of it, you can see down at the bottom, parts of the blue were scratched away. Miriam's face got scratched away, and that just makes me feel really bad. I mean, she is the one who's having the hard time in this story, and I kind of feel bad that her face is scratched away in this picture. But, well, let's just start with Miriam. She's the one who's singled out for the punishment. Isn't that curious? She gets the leprosy, not Aaron. And that just makes me think that she was the one leading the charge on this. And that's why I stopped talking about Aaron. It's Miriam and Aaron. That's an interesting order of names. Often the male name is before the female name. That's just the way that things work in the Bible. But here she is mentioned first. I think maybe she's leading the charge. She is the one who is speaking. She's leading this, and Aaron is going along or following along. And she criticizes part A, but immediately moves into part B. And that movement recognizes and reveals that she is living an insincere life. When she's talking about and complaining about this lady, that's not true. That's not the thing. There's something else that's bothering her, and then that comes out. And it recognizes and reveals that she's got some ruined relationships here. And it's been maybe ruined in her heart for some time. And when the words came out, then it ruined it with other people. I think that's interesting to think about. And then we have Aaron. Did he simply just follow along? Did he follow along and totally agree? Or did he follow along and only kind of agree? I have to, you know, you can make up the way you want to look at his attitude in the story. I'm going to go with, so that I can make a specific point, but I don't know if this is true, that he was following along, but he wasn't completely sincere about it. He was like, I don't know, you know, Moses, God's talking to Moses, I don't know, Miriam. But he didn't speak up and stop her, or he didn't speak up and defend Moses. And so there's this waffling. I'm going to say that that's where he's in. He's at. He's waffling back and forth, and he's not really making a choice, and he's not really being active in this. And we need to remember that when I choose to not make a choice, then I've chosen something. Or when I am not active to do the right thing, I have done a thing. And passivity is action. And so he did not do, and that's what he did. He did no thing. And that's a problem. But then when he sees, I love the way that it's told in verse 10, Miriam was leprous like snow, and Aaron turned in toward Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. It's like this doubling up to see just how intense it was. And Aaron said to Moses in verse 11, "Oh, my Lord, do not punish us because we have done foolishly and have sinned. Let her not be as one who is dead, whose flesh is half eaten away when she comes out of her mother's womb." We have sinned, flat out. Just is honest about it. He turns to Moses and says, "Oh, my Lord." And my translation doesn't capitalize the L, as in it's saying he's speaking to Moses and calling him Lord, and I think that that's appropriate. I can also imagine him, he's looking at Moses, speaking to the Lord. I don't know. It's this really interesting thing here, because it's not Moses who's going to be able to forgive the sin. So there's this interesting turn. He's turning to the man that they've wronged, and he's also speaking to God about sin, so we can see he's putting the things here together, I think, in a good way. He recognizes, well, I've sinned against man, I've sinned against God. This is a big deal. This is a lot of humility for someone who, as the way I'm telling the story, had been doing nothing. He is doing a thing. This is righteousness right here. For this failure in the story, he is stepping up to the plate, and he is being righteous. And this is a great thing. We need to recognize this, and Aaron seems a little bit late, but at least he's acting that way. And then we get Moses. Well, Moses, chapter 12, verse 3, one of the funniest verses in the Bible, since we know that it's Moses who wrote it down, and Moses writes about himself, "I am the most meek person on the planet." And he didn't write, "I am." It's in the other case, right? He. And it's just such a, you know, it's just fun to, it's just a tickle to think about that. When Moses is writing down the words of God, and then he had to write that about himself, that he, like, oh my goodness, what am I even writing? I just like to think about that moment. But this is the truth. If you look at the life of Moses and you count up all his failures and then you count up all of his not at all failing in the face of people being ugly to him, this guy is amazing. He's amazing. And he is meekness. He is what it's about. That's his character. He is just flat out righteous in this category. He stumbled some. Good grief, we've all stumbled on this. But that's what he is. We can see that in him. And he does nothing in their complaint. He doesn't speak until, was it verse 13? He hasn't talked. They come up and they're complaining about the wife and they're complaining about him speaking and he hasn't spoken. And you go through the whole book of Numbers, and all the times when someone is charging against Moses or complaining against Moses, and I was looking up the phrase fall on his face, he would fall down on his face. And often he and Aaron would do that together, and I think that that's interesting to see Aaron's behavior with that too. He wouldn't fight back. We don't necessarily even see him defending himself. This is a big deal. We can learn a lot from that. And then he prays for her. Ugh, sister. And how does he pray for her? Oh God, please heal her, please. My goodness. That, not to make fun of Moses, you know, like my 3-year-old can do that prayer. That's how uncomplicated that prayer is. Oh Lord, please heal her, please. This is a basic, this is a simple, this is nothing. I think it reveals his concern, his care. He continued to communicate his compassion for her. Aaron was able to apologize because Moses wasn't a jerk. Miriam knew her brother loved her, because he prayed right there. This is great stuff. What are the consequences of this critical attitude? Well, relationships are trashed. The family relationship is trashed, and the spiritual relationship is trashed. She comes out, and she complains, and Aaron's along with her, and maybe it's been building. Don't let it build. And finally, it blows out. Don't let it blow out. Because her relationship with God is bad. She's gone, although she can get back with God. Her relationship with her brother is bad. It's gone, except he is continuing to reach out to her. This is a big deal. When we are critical, it brings immediate punishment. And I put the word immediate in quotation marks because I think it needs to be in quotation marks. But right there, it was immediate punishment for her. There's going to be, at the very least, immediate consequences for our critical language. It's going to immediately hurt somebody. It's going to immediately count against us. And I don't think you're just going to pop out with leprosy, but there are bad things that are going to happen. Now, she was only going to have it for a little time, but it was a real consequence, and it was a real punishment. And I don't know what's going to happen in our lives. But I just wanted to impress upon myself as I was thinking about this lesson, she said it and she was ruined. And we need to treat sin that way. And then, what else did it do? Nobody could move. Nobody could go. You've got 4, 5, 6 of your family all in a car. You've got a 14-hour drive. And everyone, this is the chance to stop and go to the bathroom. This is the chance. And everyone goes. 20 minutes later down the road, somebody has the nerve to have a body that has needs. Right? How many hundreds of thousands of people had to stay put for a week when they had somewhere to go? This is unbelievable. Do you think word got round? Right? How embarrassing. When we act this way, it's going to do things to other people, whether we like it or not. Well, I'm only being critical to this guy right here. Why is everybody else offended and hurt by that? We got to recognize that that's what this does. Romans 1:21, for although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but became futile and dark. You know, if she was honoring God and thankful for all that God had given, I don't think she would have seen the need to be critical of Moses. Or at the very least, she would have been so busy honoring and thanking that she wouldn't have had time to be critical of Moses. All right, well, we're just going to close by looking at some of these passages in the New Testament that we were looking at before, over in 1 Corinthians 13. And just start, take a Bible story, take the characters from the Bible story, and go read your New Testament list and say, well, who's doing what? Love is patient, love is kind. Moses, flat out. I mean, who? Moses. You might want to even say God, although the patience is like, he's very quick. It's really interesting here. We know that God is patient and kind. But Moses is patient and kind in this story, and we can learn about that. We can look and observe him. Love doesn't envy or boast. It isn't arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. Oh, poor. Poor Miriam. She just crumbles in that one. Her criticism, her desire. When we are critical of others, we are not loving. If we need to point out wrong, that can be connected with our love for them. When we are critical of others, we are not loving. That's the difference there, right? What about it doesn't rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth? I've got Aaron with a question mark, because Aaron didn't step up for the truth, maybe. That's what I'm putting in that story. That doesn't have to be the true event for Aaron, but I can use him and envision that as a way of learning. I need to be able to stand up for the truth and not rejoice at the wrong that's happening. And I can learn that, you know, learn that lesson for myself, superimposing Aaron onto that. We also looked at Titus. It's 7 and 8, talking about these qualities of what the elders and the bishops are going to be like. They need to be above reproach. Was Aaron above reproach? Well, he wasn't. He was at the end. He prayed. He repented, right? To not be arrogant or greedy for gain. Miriam knew what she deserved. And she was wrong. You know what you deserve. You know what's coming to you. And I know it too, and I need to recognize that I'm wrong. The only thing that I deserve is the punishment that I don't want. We need to be lovers of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. And if you look at the life of Moses, if you look at the actions of Moses in the story, you're going to see that for sure. Let's close by looking at, I've been doing passages other than actual Psalms, Philippians 4. Philippians 4 was one of the other lists that I wanted to include, but I thought that having too many lists and comparing these things, I just limited it to 1 Corinthians 13 and Titus 1. And then we can close by looking at this, because I think that in Philippians 4, we are also getting the encouragement. We are also getting this bright and this excitement about what we're moving towards. We can behave like Moses. We're going to have to practice, and we're going to mess up. So did Moses. Moses messed up. But we can do the things that Moses did, and we can stop and pull back the critical actions and thoughts that Miriam and Aaron had. We can get those things under control. Let's look at Philippians 4, starting in verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. And your translation might have any number of things. Let your reasonableness, your gentleness, your moderation. It's a great word. I like gentleness. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. If we reach out to God, dear God, Moses is talking too much. I know that I can speak for you. Help me figure this out. Do you think that God is not going to help you in that? In everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God that surpasses everything you understand will guard your heart and mind. And so this is what we need to do. We need to not be critical. We need to not be judgmental. We need to be careful about the way that we reach out or react to the people around us, because we are hurting each other when we act that way. And we need to find the stories that are going to show those illustrations that we can learn from it and put these complicated words or these complicated lists into action so that we will do what God wants us to do. May God bless us and help us to calm down our hot hearts and help us instead to be loving and merciful and gentle to each other. I don't know what you need in your life other than the fact that I know that everyone in this room needs Jesus. A lot of us have Jesus in our life, and we still need him every single day. If you need to be saved and have the waters of baptism wash away your sin by being washed in the blood of Jesus, if you need that sort of help, we're happy to help you out with that. Why don't you come forward and let us know as we stand together and sing.